Okay, so yeah, it's a huge honour and privilege to be stood up here. A year ago, this was my first order weekend, so it feels slightly outrageous to be stood here, but here I am. So I'll start this talk by, we'll hear from Bante. Guinevere loved the king, much less than she esteemed, and so of gallant Lancelot she dreamed and dreamed and dreamed. Let love and duty coincide, lest both of them be hurled to ruin, and the crack of doom be heard around the world. I'll read that one more time. Guinevere loved the king, much less than she esteemed, and so of gallant Lancelot she dreamed and dreamed and dreamed. Let love and duty coincide, lest both of them be hurled to ruin, and the crack of doom be heard around the world. So hopefully that will become relevant why I've read that in a second, if it hasn't already. It seems to coincide with the theme of unity that we've heard so far. So I've just recently come back from Padmaloka, from a week retreat on the 7-point mind training. And for those that were on that retreat, I'm sure they can testify, I took a bit of a battering, actually. It was just a week, so it's quite intense. And we had Padmavajra give 5 or 6 talks. You know, he was talking every day and going through line by line the 7-point mind training and just really hammering us with the Dharma. And each day, for me at least, I'd return to our study group and just, you know, sort of limping in the door, just feeling very bruised and very humiliated in the most possible way. So I come to you today to speak very much still under the influence of Padmavajra, very much still under the influence of that positive shame and humiliation. And what I got from that retreat, what became very obvious, painfully obvious to me, especially towards the end of the retreat, is how much of me isn't involved in going for refuge to the Three Jewels. I found that quite painful, actually, to see that. Such was the extent of the hammering we got. And what I noticed most of all was my own selfishness, my own self-centeredness, just became excruciating, actually, in the last couple of days. I felt very embarrassed about my selfishness and self-centeredness. What it's left in me is a sense of wanting to contribute more. So recognising I do make, I think, quite a good contribution to my local centre, to my Dharma life and to the order, but I haven't even really got started yet. So I came back with this sense of I need to do more. I needed a change of attitude, actually, like a change of attitude, and hopefully that will come through in this talk. Yeah, so the retreat left me wanting to give more to the order, more to my Dharma life, more to Bante, and more importantly, to go further. That's the theme of this talk, is about going further in myself, but also in the order, as an order. And in short, I want to eradicate my own complacency. So like others have mentioned, I feel a bit uncomfortable with the title of the talk, What I Want from the Tree Ratna Buddhist Order. I felt uncomfortable anyway, but then I went on this retreat and I was like, oh, crikey, you know, how dare I stand up here and say what I want. Yeah, but what I think I can say is that I want love and duty to unite. I want love and duty to unite in myself, and I also want love and duty to unite within the order. Yes. So Bante, in his poem, that's the first and the last verse of the poem Love and Duty, which is the middle poem of 3 poems that he wrote around the Arthurian legends. And he presents a dilemma to us, quite a familiar dilemma. Guinevere is betrothed to the elderly king. She respects him, looks up to him, but she doesn't love him. And then there's Lancelot, of which she dreamed and dreamed and dreamed, who she loves with all of her heart, He's a very handsome young man. So I think this tension really relates to me, and I think it probably relates to the order to some extent. So as a Buddhist, I look up to the Dharma. I love the Dharma. But where is my heart really, actually? That's where I came out of this retreat, thinking, you know, I love the Dharma, I look up to it, but where is my heart? And in the same way we could apply that to Bante, I could apply that to Bante. I look up to Bante. I'm devoted to him. I'm a disciple of Bante's. I even say I love Bante. But where is my heart in that? Where really is my heart in that? Where is my energy really, really going? So it's quite a humbling experience, this retreat. So I don't want to do myself a disservice, but I also don't want to dishonour coming out of a quite a powerful retreat. So where are my energies going? At worst, I think it just goes into my own selfishness, my own self-centeredness. At best, into my own preoccupation with my own Dharma life. That's not completely, you know, true. There are aspects which feel wholehearted. You know, I could point those out, but for me, that's what's coming out of this retreat, relative to me. And sometimes I think I rest too much on the satisfaction of having a great teacher. I have a great teacher, we all have a great teacher, and I think I rest too much on that satisfaction. I'm a very devoted disciple. I consider myself practicing the path of devotion. But I think on occasion I rest on that too much. I get too satisfied that I've got a great teacher. Yeah. It's like I have this deep surge of inspiration and it meets Bante, the object of my devotion. And then that's usually where it ends. It's like I'm satisfied by that. I have this this upsurge of inspiration about the Dharma and about Bante. And there he is on my shrine. And I thought, ah, yes, I've got a great teacher. And to my shame, I rarely go further than that. Or I feel I rarely go further than that. Until about 2 years ago, until 2 years ago when I received my invitation to go to Gukhyaloka, that really transformed me, actually. Just receiving the invitation transformed me. And I began, I think, in hindsight now, looking back at that in the light of wanting love and duty to unite, that journey, that love and duty uniting began when I got my letter. So I'm going to talk about three ways in my own practice in which I believe that love and duty are uniting in me, and in which my energies are starting to flow in one direction, in which this tension is starting to be resolved in a way. So my hope of talking about those three ways in which I do that, in which I believe love and duty are uniting, is that that inspires others. And that I suppose the order that I want, the order that is united in love and duty, manifests by inspiring others to practice in the same way. So I'm going to talk about three things, and I'll tell you what they are as we go along. So the first one, it's really lovely when you're on retreat, or you come up, you discover a term which describes your experience that you've been having for some time. So on this retreat at Padmaloka, Padmavajra talked about this term, I don't know whether I'm going to be able to pronounce it right, Kirtignana. So he translated it as knowledge of benefits received by others. When I heard this term from Padmavajra, I was really excited because it was for the first time I think I'd heard this idea of devotion and gratitude being spoken as a knowledge or a wisdom. So that really excited me. So yeah, that really relates to me because all of us have received the Dharma. We've received the supreme gift of the Dharma. And we've received that from Bante. And for me, at ordination, maybe a bit before, but certainly at ordination, the, you know, I don't even think you can call Bante an ordinary teacher, but it's like the ordinary teacher, for argument's sake, became the archetypal teacher. For me, I would use the archetypal guru. It's like at ordination, my relationship to Bante has completely changed. Yeah, it's like his archetypal significance has really come into the mix of seeing him beforehand as more of a historical person, as a person, as a teacher in the flesh. I'm starting to see him more in terms of his archetypal significance. And so for me, Kirti Jnana is sort of an unwillingness and an inability to separate Bante from the Dharma that he gave me and that he gave us. And I think that's a really important thing for me to develop and for others to develop, and so especially to develop in the current climate we find ourselves in within Tri Ratna. What worries me is when I've seen or heard people try and separate the man who gave you the Dharma from the Dharma he gave you. For me personally, you can't do that. It's impossible to do that. I feel that I can't separate Bante from the Dharma he gave me. And of course, he gave me that Dharma through various avenues, through my teachers, for example. And I think it's also a quality, this knowledge of the benefits received by others is something we probably do need to look at in the future when Bante's not around, is we're going to need to have not just a feeling of devotion, we're going to have to know that Bante has given us something supremely precious. And we will need to think of that, I'll need to think of that more in terms of knowledge and wisdom. So that brings up to me, for me, about protecting that wisdom and serving that wisdom, particularly around protecting it. Protecting this idea that you can't separate Bante from the Dharma that he gave us. So the second thing in which I feel like love and duty are beginning to coincide, to unite, is my attitude to Bante's writings. And it's really interesting, that's been quite a common theme through these talks. Again, a confession really, actually. I consider myself, I love to collect Bante's writings. I actually just love to have them in my home. I love to read Bante, even when I don't understand him. I just love to he's like a constant friend. And I love to have those writings in my life. But if I'm more honest, a lot of that reading is quite dutiful and doesn't go very deep. I don't think I give enough energy, time, to understanding what Bante is actually trying to tell me. I was recently reading The Three Jewels and just thinking, I don't really understand the significance of what he's saying here. And in the past, that's been okay. That's been acceptable to say that. But it feels no longer acceptable to say that. One of the key root texts of our tradition, I don't really understand. Or there's parts of it I find difficult to understand. So emerging in me is this commitment to understand what Bante is trying to tell us. And there are so many. I'm so blessed to have so many friends and so many people in my life who can help me to understand, help me understand Bante. But perhaps one person I can mention who does this exceptionally well is Padmavajra. What I find so thrilling about him is his certainty of what Bante is getting at when he, gives a talk on 7-point mind training. He'll bring in Bante seminars, Bante's writings, and he will tell you what Bante means in a really cutting way that I really love. Actually, I like to be cut down and told what is happening. Maybe I shouldn't be careful what I wish for when I say that. So I guess what I'm getting at is I need to go further in just further than just being sparked off and inspired by Bante. That's felt acceptable, just to be sparked off and inspired. Coming out of this retreat, it feels no longer acceptable just to be inspired and sparked off. It's an energy that comes up, it arises, and it goes all wobbly, and it can't really support much. So yeah, more studying, more practicing, more realizing is what I feel like I need to do. It's also beginning, it's also beginning to see Bante's Dharma as the Dharma, that it's more than adequate for us. And if it is the Dharma, then we can hold that up with pride as something quite sacred and something extremely precious. And I can hear that in the others that have spoken today, how important those writings are. And more is required of me to view Bante's writings differently, as something sacred, something to hold up, something to be proud of. So much more is required of me. So much more is required of us as an order to unite around. The third way is, it's quite spooky actually, the desire to live a religious life. Since ordination, it's like all I want to do is just live a religious life. And as Paramabandhu said, that's not a very trendy word. And I suppose what I mean by that is, faithful, devoted and committed. Not in a naive way, not in a pious way. But being part of a religious life, being part of a religious order that manifests as a living and breathing bodhisattva, like both as individuals and as collectively as an order. I'm not making any claims there at all. I'm just saying that that's what it feels like is required of me, that I can't rest on my laurels anymore. I have to live and breathe the Dharma in every area of my life. Okay, so to recap, I think the one thing I want is for love and duty to unite, and for us to go further as an order and further as individuals. And the individual I have in mind is me. And to go further into exploring what it actually means to have a precious teacher. So many other traditions don't seem to have a problem with this. It seems to be, you've got a teacher, he's the one, And I feel like there's so much more scope for us to open that up and explore what does it actually mean to have a precious teacher? How does that express itself beyond inspiration, beyond devotion? What is that a gateway to? So yeah, my three ways of helping for love and duty to unite within myself and potentially within the order is cultivating the knowledge of benefits received by others, this kirti jnana, holding up and protecting the sacred dharma of our teacher, and three, exploring, developing the path of devotion as a way of developing wisdom and bodhicitta. But I'm aware in saying that really what it comes down to is me, and for all of us what it really comes down to is ourselves, our own practice. So this idea of it all coming back to me is very, links in quite nicely to the 7-point mind training, where it's all about what are you doing. And there's another aspect of my life in which since April I've been practicing guru yoga. And that really struck me, that what's happening in the guru yoga is that it's coming down to you. So I thought I would just read and then I'll, I won't keep you much longer. I won't ask anyone to lock the doors or anything. So you have in this prayer in the Guru Yoga, Primeval Buddha Samantabhadra, Infinite Light, Amitabha, right at the top of above your head. Lord of the Himalayas, Kashyapana, Avalokiteshvara below him. Rainbow Body Padmasambhava, Sovereign of the Visible World, Padmasambhava. Together with the emanation Rigzen Ningpo, which is Bante, and then, that's Bante. We can have Bante there. I pray to you all to grant me your Adhisthana. So above your head, you have this amazing lineage of masters. And that's, you know, that is really reassuring and encouraging. But the next verse, so you've asked for your blessings. The next verse is, the primevally pure, self-originated Shunyata must be realized. Training in the hard-cutting, abrupt, skillful path. Attaining the non-dual Jnanakaya. May my manifestations deliver the infinite living beings. So at this point, you're visualizing yourself as Vajrayogini. So the way when I chant that verse, and I chant it quite fast, it's like I have this lineage of inspiration, but it all comes back to me. How in my life will I manifest for the benefit of all beings? It's all very well having these masters above my head, feeding me with their inspiration, but how exactly will that manifest in my life? So I was going to end with a very short reading, very important reading actually, just talking about Mitra study. So we did the Tantric Path as part of my Mitra study. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about Vajrayogini and then I'll end. So it all comes down to me really, and it all comes but down to me manifesting in my Dharma life. I find that wants to come out as something like Vajrayogini. It's up to me. And Bante gives this amazing description of her, which when I heard this, when we were doing Mitra study, for me, gave me my first glimpse that there was another way that I could exist. One of my tendencies is I tend to be quite contained and quite good. So when I heard this description of Vajrayogini, I felt, well, that's, you know, I don't have to be that way if I don't want to be. So yeah, I'll read Bante. It's a short description of her and then I'll end. So in reading this, I guess I'm thinking the symbol of the order is Avalokiteshvara, the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara. Maybe the symbol for the individual within that could be something like Vajrayogini. In the case of Sarva Buddha Dakini, in the case, in fact, of all the celestial maidens, the emotional arousal is total. So the blood suffuses not only the face, but the whole body. The whole body blushes crimson. The Dakini represents the state of total emotional involvement. Total emotional involvement in the spiritual life. This is why also the hair of the Dakini is dishevelled. She lets her hair fly to the winds. She doesn't care about keeping it tidy. She doesn't care anymore. She doesn't care about decorum, doesn't care what people may think or say. The Dakini just abandons herself. She is abandoned. Sometimes it is said that the Dakini throws herself into the spiritual life, or what is represented by the Dakini throws herself into the spiritual life. Thank you.